I'll be reading from Joel 2. And afterwards, I will pour out my spirit on all the people. Your sons and daughters will prophesy. Your old men will dream dreams. Your young men will see visions. Even on my servants, both men and women, I will pour out my spirit in those days. I will show wonders in the heavens and on the earth, blood and fire and billows of smoke. The sun will be turned to darkness and the moon to blood before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Lord. And everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. For on Mount Zion and in Jerusalem, there will be deliverance, as the Lord has said, among the survivors whom the Lord calls.
Good morning. Great to have all of you with us. Several visitors. We're glad that you're with us. I invite you to be back at any opportunity that you have to be back with us. Tonight at our 6 p.m. assembly, Roy Justice will be speaking. Yeah, shake your head this way, Roy. Acknowledge. Hope that's not a secret to you. And we'll look forward to that. It's in our summer series. Different men of the congregation have been speaking on some of our Sunday nights. So we look forward to that. And next Sunday night, we will not meet here, but we will meet together at 5 o'clock at Auburntown Park. And we'll have a time of fellowship and devotion and games at the park. So hope that you'll join us next Sunday night at 5 instead of 6. Everyone is welcome as we spend some time together. It's kind of a back-to-school event for all of us, not only us starting back to school, but those of us who are a little bit past that. So that will be next Sunday evening's assembly. So hope that you'll come and be a part of that. Jesus is crucified at the Feast of Passover. And so we're going to see in Acts chapter 2, that we're going to look at in just a few moments, that we are 50 days later at the Feast of Pentecost. Both of these are feasts that those who could, who were in close enough proximity, would make the pilgrimage to Jerusalem to celebrate these great feasts, these great commemorations in Jerusalem. And so Jerusalem would swell in population, many times its normal population for these feasts. And some folks would be close enough that they could come every year. Some of them could only make pilgrimages periodically, and some never were able to get there, but would be large numbers of folks. So here we are 50 days later, and the number of individuals in Jerusalem has swollen again, and so a lot of folks who aren't in Jerusalem regularly would have been back. And we need to keep that in mind as we look at what the Apostle Peter is preaching to a crowd who many of them would have been in Jerusalem just a few weeks earlier when Jesus was crucified. And so what we need to understand is they knew, whether they were there or not, that Jesus had been crucified. That wasn't an issue that was in dispute. That wasn't a fact that was in dispute, that Jesus had been crucified. They knew it. He was crucified publicly. And, you know, there are great events that occurred around the crucifixion of Jesus. Remember, it goes dark in the middle of the day. We're only 7 weeks later, but you bet that's still a topic of conversation. I mean, the dead arose and came into Jerusalem. I bet they're still talking about that. The reason I say it that way is sometimes as we read that, we just kind of move on through it. But here we are in Jerusalem just weeks after these events. And so Jesus' crucifixion would have been a major event anyway. But then the events that occurred around it made it even larger, because there was a lot going on, and not everybody was probably paying attention to what was happening in the courts and among the people at the time of Passover, where Jesus is crucified. And of course, it's an earth-shattering event. It changed the course of human history. But there would have been folks at the time who probably would have missed it, at least for a while, what was going on. But they don't miss the sky is turning dark. And I'm pretty sure they don't miss the conversation about the dead being resurrected and coming back in to Jerusalem. So that conversation is going on, and then there is the conversation about Jesus' resurrection, that the tomb is empty, which was a great discussion among the people. And remember that they had set guards around the tomb because they knew what the disciples of Jesus were saying. And so here are the guards, and yet the tomb is empty. And you remember, the guards normally would have suffered tremendous consequences for that happening, and they're kind of paid off, and that's handled as part of the text tells us that. So here we are 7 weeks later, and the city, that's still going to be a great topic of discussion among the people in Jerusalem about Jesus, this man Jesus, and what happened to him and the events that occurred around it. That's going to be a discussion. And now Peter and the apostles have probably been fairly quiet during this period of time, but now on Pentecost, the Spirit is descending on the apostle like tongues of fire. The Spirit of God has descended on them, and they have begun to preach. And the people's assumption is, or at least some of them, the conversation was that these men are drunk. That they are just up here and they are drunk. Now, human nature doesn't change a great deal. Still, with folks with whom we disagree, we try to paint them in the worst light absolutely possible, don't we? When it's political campaign season, your mailbox is probably full like mine is during that season. In fact, I think we're going to increase the number of elections because the post office needs it, you know, because that's the most mail I get all the time. And I don't have to look at the writing to almost immediately tell who a mail piece is supporting and who they're not by the picture. If the picture makes you look good, if it is a good picture of the candidate, it probably at least supports them. If the candidate is out of focus or has, you know, colors around it or has some distorted look on their face or it is absolutely the worst picture, like you've seen mug shots that look better, it is against them. You don't have to read the text. You already know. And the same thing is true in Pentecost. These folks, these are followers of Jesus with whom we disagree. So what are we immediately doing? We're saying, hey, they're just drunk. These guys are drunk. Don't pay any attention to them. It's against that backdrop that Peter begins to speak to them. And what I want us to see as we look at this is really kind of laying a foundation for a lesson that we'll talk about next week. But how does Peter address this crowd? This crowd who was in Jerusalem. Why? Because of Pentecost, many of them. Some of them would have been permanent residents of Jerusalem. But many of them are here because of Pentecost. So their heritage, their background, their religion, their most of them, their family line is from Israel. These are Jewish people. And they know the Jewish law. They know the conversations among the Jewish people, the teaching of the rabbis. This is the backdrop. This is the history and the heritage that they know. And it is from that position that Peter begins to speak to them. Now, it's interesting that in Acts 17, we have a discourse from Paul to a Greek audience. And he doesn't use any of the same information. Talking about Jesus, talking about God, but uses different information. Why? Because they weren't grown up, they had not grown up in the prophecies of the Old Testament or the teaching of the law. So he talks about their religious monuments. He talks about their literature and their poetry. But Peter uses a different approach about to people who understood the law and the prophets. And we've been reading, as you know, through the scripture together this year. And we've been reading through the prophecies, and it is those prophecies that Peter is going to quote and is going to talk about. So let's pick up in Acts chapter 2, and we'll read this together and talk about it for a moment. Then Peter stood up with the 11. There's not 12. What happened to one of the apostles who gets replaced? But remember, Judas does what? Kills himself after he betrays Jesus. He raised his voice and addressed the crowd. Fellow Jews and all of you who live in Jerusalem, let me explain this to you. Listen carefully to what I say. These men are not drunk as you suppose, because it's only 9 o'clock in the morning. It's too early for them to be drunk, is his argument. No, this is what was spoken of by the prophet Joel. This is a fulfillment of prophecy, and that's what Sam read for us from the prophecy of Joel. In the last days, God says, I will pour out my spirit on all people. Your sons and daughters will prophesy. Your young men will see visions. Your old men will dream dreams. Even on my servants, both men and women, I will pour out my spirit in those days, and they will prophesy. I will show wonders in the heaven above and signs on the earth below, blood and fire and billows of smoke. The sun will be turned to darkness and the moon to blood before the coming of the great and glorious day of the Lord. And everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. Men of Israel, listen to this. All right, he's given them the prophecy from Joel. Jesus of Nazareth. Who's he talking about? Jesus. Does he call him Jesus Christ? No, he's getting to that point. Because remember, what do these people know? What do they know? That there was a man called Jesus from Nazareth who claimed to be the Messiah, who has disciples, and who was crucified. It's important to understand that they already know that. He doesn't have to talk about Jesus from a historical perspective. He doesn't have to go to other writings. These people are witnesses. They know. They understand that there was a man, Jesus, who died just weeks before in Jerusalem. That's an understood. That's a given. Many of them were there. Some in this crowd had yelled, "Crucify him, crucify him." I mean, these folks were on the front lines of what happened to Jesus. So he is working then from the knowledge that you know who Jesus, the man from Nazareth, was. He was a man now accredited by God to you by miracles, wonders, and signs which God did among you through him and whom you yourselves know. Not only did this man exist, but he did great wonders. Were they public? They were. People were bringing folks to him, were they not? Bringing children, bringing those who were sick to Jesus for healing. They were coming to him by the thousands. And he was able to teach them and to feed them in miraculous ways. And those events, these people knew. You know that. This man was handed over to you by God's set purpose and foreknowledge, and you, with the help of wicked men, put him to death by nailing him on a cross. That, so far, is really undisputable fact to which they all knew. But God raised him from the dead, Peter says, freeing him from the agony of death. Because it was impossible for death to keep its hold on him. So, Peter's saying that this man Jesus, who you know lived, and who you know did miracles, and who you know was crucified, and you have heard the discussion that he's been raised from the dead. And so not only are we talking about the literal event of Jesus' resurrection, but what is the significance of the resurrection of Jesus? Because Paul talks about it extensively. not exclusively, but almost. I mean, it is Paul's message is resurrection. Paul's message is resurrection. Not just because it exemplifies God's power in Jesus, but because overcoming death is to overcome the consequences, the punishment of sin itself. That death is the consequences of sin. That death entered the world when sin came into the world in the garden. It is Satan's power and domain, and Jesus, by the power of God, overcomes death. So not only has he been raised to show God's power and who God is, but he has overcome the power of Satan himself. Now we're going to quote from the Psalms of David. Because who is David? He's the great king of Israel, right? The man after God's own heart. Does not build the temple. His son Solomon does, but makes provision for the building of the temple. It is the teaching, the thought, the anticipation that the Messiah will sit on the throne of David in Israel. All right? Will sit on David's throne and will rule a free and independent and unenslaved Israel. So now Peter will quote from the Psalms of the great King David. I saw the Lord always before me. Because he is at my right hand, I will not be shaken. Therefore my heart is glad and my tongue rejoices. My body also will live in hope because you will not abandon me to the grave, nor will you let your Holy One see decay. You have made known to me the paths of life. You will fill me with joy in your presence. That's a quote from David. That for many of them would have perceived this as David talking about himself. Okay? And so now Peter's going to say, here's a quote, and I believe that's from the 16th Psalm. David's going, now here's what Peter's going to say. Brothers, I can tell you confidently, with confidence, that the patriarch David died and was buried, and his tomb is here to this day. What's the prophecy? You will not let the Holy One's body see decay, right? That's the psalm, and it is a prophecy. And Peter's argument is, David's not talking about himself because here is this monument that's David's tomb that's in Jerusalem, still exists today. Here's where the great King David is buried. If you go to Arlington Cemetery, the eternal flame burns over the tomb of John Kennedy, right? That tomb is there. You know it's there. And it reminds us of the events surrounding the death, the assassination of the president. But he's there. Well, David's tomb's here. You've seen it. It's not off somewhere we think he died. He died, and here's his tomb. He was buried like other people have been buried. So David's not talking about himself. But he was a prophet, Peter will say, and knew that God had promised him on oath that he would place one of his descendants on his throne. Seeing what was ahead, he spoke of the resurrection of the Christ, that he was not abandoned to the grave, nor did his body see decay. So who's David talking about? Not himself, but the coming of the Christ. That he sees resurrection coming. That David is the prophet who sees resurrection coming. Just like the prophecies that we've been reading in the Old Testament of Isaiah and of Jeremiah and of Joel, who have some prophecy that apply to their time and some prophecy that they're seeing into the time of the first century. So David sees this coming, but he knows he's not speaking of himself. He's speaking of one of his descendants of whom Jesus is. Now, who is David talking about? The resurrection of the Christ, the anointed one. The reason I show that is, at this point, Peter has not drawn the two completely together. Because they're looking for the Christ, the anointed one of God, right? And so, Peter is saying this prophecy from the Psalm is not about David, whose tomb is here, who has gone to the ground, whose body has decayed, but he is talking about his descendant who is going to be the Christ, the Messiah. Okay? So, and at this point, they're following along in that discussion. That's making sense. This is who David is talking about. Because when you and I hear Christ, what do we automatically think of? I bet you think of Jesus, right? Well, he's fixed to make that connection, but he hadn't made it yet, so don't jump a thought ahead. The thought is, you know David has died. And so the prophecy obviously is not about himself. It's about the coming of the Messiah, which you anticipate coming, which the rabbis have talked about. That as a nation, as a people, we are looking for the coming of the Messiah, who is the one David's talking about, who will not see death, will not see decay, or who not see death, will see death, will not see decay. Now here's where Peter draws those together. God has raised this Jesus. Who is Jesus? Jesus of Nazareth, that they knew that he died on the cross 7 weeks before, who had taught in Galilee, who had taught in Jerusalem and Judea, who had been put to death, whom the conversation was had been raised from the dead. But Peter is pulling it all together and saying, you've been looking for the Christ who would not see decay. This Jesus, God the Father, has raised to life. And we are all witnesses of the fact. Had the apostles seen Jesus? Yes. Had other individuals seen the resurrected Jesus? Yes. They had seen him, and so Peter is saying, we're witnesses to the fact that Jesus was raised from the dead. That he has been exalted to the right hand of God and received from the Father the promised Holy Spirit and has poured out what you know, what you now see and hear. We're not drunk, but this Jesus Christ raised from the dead is the Messiah, and you are witnessing the fulfillment of the prophecies of Joel. For David did not ascend to heaven, and yet he said, the Lord said to my Lord, set at my right hand until I make your enemies a footstool for your feet. That's the 110th Psalm. Therefore, let all Israel be assured of this. God has made this Jesus, whom you crucified, both Lord and Christ. This man, Jesus, whom you knew of, many of you knew, God has made him Lord and Christ, Messiah, the Anointed One. When the people heard this, they were cut to their heart and said to Peter and the other apostles, brothers, what shall we do? That's going to be next week's lesson, Peter's response to the crowd. What shall we do? What had moved them to the point of asking this most important question? What shall we do? To me, it's almost, what are we going to do now? I think that's where they are. What are we going to do now? You're right. We get it. You have tied in the prophecy. Those things that we have understood that are foundations of our lives and of our faith and what we have known and been taught all of our lives. And this man, Jesus, is the Christ. Because he came to us in miracles. He has been resurrected. And Peter pulls no punches. He said, this man Christ, who David, the great king, saw in prophecy coming, you have put to death. You have crucified. I think that's how they would have heard it. Because we don't probably hear it quite that strongly as they would have. Because what I tell you, the text doesn't tell us, but I'm pretty sure probability is some, if not many, of this crowd would have yelled, called for the crucifixion of Jesus. I mean, they're not just innocent bystanders. They're involved in the conflict, and now they understand that Jesus, the man, is the Christ, the Messiah. And they have put him to death. And so the question comes, now, what are we going to do? Where are we now? Where does this leave us? That we have crucified the Messiah. That we have put to death God's anointed one. How big a deal was that? I want you to be kind of thinking about this week. Not only was it a huge deal just from a fulfillment of prophecy, it was historically a huge deal. What would David not do to Saul? I will not harm him, even though he's trying to kill me, even though he is my enemy. I will not kill him. Why? Because he is God's anointed one, right? They knew that. They knew those teachings. And so now Peter has convinced them that the fulfillment of prophecy, that the Messiah, that the great deliverer of God's people, they had crucified. And it leaves them asking the question, what now are we going to do? Next week, Lord wills, we're going to talk about what Peter tells them now that they ought to do. And we're going to talk about how, while removed by years and geography and events, we're really not different from that crowd that heard Peter's sermon and how it applies to us. We know Jesus was raised from the dead. It's the first fruits of all of us who will be raised from the dead. And that he went to that cross not because of a failed plan, not because of the Romans or the Jews, even though they were involved. It was because it was God's plan for Jesus to become the sacrifice for our sin that we might be forgiven. He becomes the Passover lamb that takes away the sins of all the world. And through him, then we have forgiveness and the hope and the promise of eternal life. And that's what we're going to talk about in greater detail next week. But today, if you need to respond, would you do that while we stand and sing?